Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome back to The Sound Table. I'm your host, Austin, and I'm joined by our co-host, Miranda.
Hello.
And today we are actually doing a Q&A episode. So about a week ago from the time of us filming it, I posted an Instagram story, basically just allowing people to submit whatever questions they want, whether they pertain to running a business, producing music, something, you know, personal, but not too personal. So we're just going to run through that, and we're going to talk about all of that in this podcast. We are literally filming this first thing in the morning. We haven't had breakfast. I'm drinking my coffee because tomorrow we actually go on our first vacation in like a year. Like the last time we went out was Italy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. We went to Italy for like 2 weeks last year. And yeah, haven't taken time off since that. So we're going to Mexico tomorrow. So by the time you see this, we'll already be back and we'll have a nice tan going as long as it doesn't rain. But yeah, if it takes us a second to kind of get up to speed, I'm drinking my coffee. I promise you we're going to get there today.
I know. I'm scared that people are going to be able to tell. No. Like, you guys are weird in this video.
I might have just broken the fourth wall.
I know, by saying we're filming in the morning.
But yeah, do you want to, before we dive in, how are you?
I'm fine.
Yeah?
Stressed about packing and doing things before our trip, but I'm glad to get this done.
Going on a trip when you're like fully self-employed is such a different thing because like, obviously at an office, you still have to do your work no matter what, but like when you leave, you're like, I'm out.
Right.
Like, don't bother me. When you're self-employed, not only will people probably still bother me through the weekend and next week, but also like filming this podcast, pre-filming next week's content, pre-filming the week after that, like you're really just cramming in any of the days that you're missing into other times.
Exactly.
So like we're only missing 3 work days and the makeup for those 3 days has been crazy over the past 2 weeks.
It's also just like a ton of appointments always fall within that time. It's just like the typical thing.
But yeah, we'll go ahead and we'll hop into the question. So if you see me looking at my phone, I promise I'm not texting or anything like that. I am just looking up the images that Miranda, you said you're going to overlay in the video.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So if you're listening to the podcast, I'm still going to ask the questions before we answer them. But if you watch the video, you will see them. And if you haven't already, go check out The Sound Table on YouTube. We have a whole channel for the podcast now, and it's taken a little while to kind of get its legs, but we're enjoying putting the videos up there. And I don't know, I just have a better time filming these, I think.
Yeah.
So if you're not watching the video versions, go check that out. If you hear any cats in the background,
don't mind
that. Sophie is just screaming over there. Yeah, let's just go ahead and let's just dive in.
Also, he did not send these to me, so he is going to be reading them all. I'm sorry about that.
Do you want to read them?
No, I didn't think about that until
right
now.
I didn't read them all because, like, in my mind, I'm kind of compiling some into, like, one question or some got asked double.
Yeah.
Or some I'm, like, saving for YouTube tutorials because, like, some of these would be better as like tutorials.
No, totally.
Or others are just things that we could talk about for 3 or 4 minutes.
Right.
But the first one I want to ask one that we can actually both answer because a lot of these will probably lean more heavily production.
Right.
But somebody asked, do you think pop music will ever go back to a brighter, energetic sound?
Is it not already?
I was just about to say, I wanted to talk about this one because I kind of feel like we are in that right now. Like I feel like with the big songs being like Espresso, Hot to Go, even like Dua Lipa stuff, all of Olivia Rodrigo's bigger songs now are like more energetic and upbeat.
Yeah.
I think that we have kind of gotten out of that like really dark, really slow, kind of sad and somber mood that was like very hip hop based in like 2018.
Yeah, I feel like we're going more like 80s synth wave vibes for a minute now.
Yeah, and even like Y2K stuff. Like I feel like we're going for like that like bubblegum pop, like overly sweet, sugary aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of here for it because we did have a big period. And, you know, I'm very grateful for it because that's a lot of like my personal sound as a producer. But we had this huge period of every pop track kind of just sounded like a hip hop song with melody on it.
Right.
And they were slow and they were dark and they were all in like minor keys. And I think now we're getting out of that. Like even, you know, you look at like, I don't know, what's a big album lately? Like, we're listening to a lot of Chappell Roan right now.
Mm-hmm.
And all of her big hits are, like, the upbeat ones. She has a lot of, like, down-tempo stuff on the albums. And then, like, you look at Sabrina Carpenter, who's, like, really blowing up right now. All pretty big. Maybe it's just women artists who are doing it better. But, like, even Harry Styles' last release was all pretty energetic and up-tempo.
Yeah.
And I think, like, Charlie XCX just released a new album at the time of us filming this, and it's getting, like, insane reviews.
Yeah.
And that is, like, so Y2K meets hyperpop, like...
Even Troye Sivan's last album.
Yeah,
those are all, like, very upbeat and poppy. Not all of them, but, like, the singles, I should say.
Yeah. Yeah, like got me started. One of your boys is kind of slower.
One of your girls, you mean?
Or yeah, one of your girls.
Yeah. That's true, but like Rush.
Yeah, like Rush. Yeah. Like I feel like we are seeing this thing where honestly a lot of pop right now is getting a lot brighter and a lot clubbier. And I think a lot of it has to do with like queer artists.
Mm-hmm,
like when
for sure.
I'm thinking about people who are doing the more energetic kind of 80s, 2000s music, it is people like Chappell Roan. It is people like, you know, Troye Sivan or, you know, really anybody. Like, mm-hmm. I just think that Charlie XCX, like, I know that all of these kind of like artists who have been kind of icons for queer communities are the ones who are kind of going back to that more energetic sound. So, I mean, you look at like Lady Gaga in the 2010s.
Yeah.
I think we're kind of getting a new wave of that just with a slightly different sound and aesthetic. All right, let's go ahead and go to the second question. Who is, I assume that this was to me, who's my favorite music producer and why? But I'll let Miranda kind of weigh in.
Austin Hall.
Oh my God. Take this shit seriously. This is serious.
I don't know. Does anyone care what my favorite music producer is?
Yeah, I kind of care.
I really like Dan Nigro.
Yeah, he's sick.
I like Jack Antonoff.
Mm-hmm.
I like Ian Kirkpatrick.
Shout out Ian.
That's how you say his last name, right?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, I always feel like I'm saying it wrong. I do like your productions. That is true.
Thank you.
And then that's all I can think of right now. What about you?
I mean, obviously there's like Max Martin, who's just like an icon. I haven't been feeling the more recent stuff as much personally.
Right.
But it could just be because I've heard like 1,000 songs by him.
Yeah.
Now, and I'm, you know, at some point you're just like, oh, okay, it's a Max Martin song. It's still great.
Yeah.
I do love Ian Kirkpatrick. I love Elangelo. He's fantastic. I do love like a Jack Antonoff and a Dan Nigro. They're both really, really great. And then like just going outside of that, it just really like depends on genre. There's a lot of producers that I'll listen to pretty religiously. Like, we have a friend in town, Ayo. He's like a fantastic hip hop producer. And when I look at his catalog, I'm like, I love everything in here.
Yeah.
So I normally like more producers than not. There's a lot of like really cool, talented guys coming out of Nashville. Like, Cam Becker, he's great. He's doing like a bunch of the Knox stuff and he's doing a bunch of like the Braden Bales stuff. There's just so many cool people that I think, you know, Jackson Foote out of Loot is very, very, very fantastic. So there's just so many cool people. Like we're obviously all going to hear, you know, the big, like, you know, Max Martin, Shellback, Jack Antonoff, who are kind of like the big, big, big guys in pop.
Yeah.
But I think that there's so many people now that are just producing crazy, amazing records. Like you even look at like the guys in Knightley who self-produce or like the guys in Joan who self-produce.
Yeah, I was thinking Joan, but I was like, they self-produce all their own stuff.
They're producing K-pop now. They just placed
a massive
They sent me a demo like a year ago and I was like, this sounds like a K-pop song. And they were like, we're pitching it. And it just came out like 2 weeks ago with a big artist over there.
That's
so
awesome. Good for them.
Yeah.
I almost wore my Joan hoodie today.
Really?
Yeah, but I thought I'd get too hot.
They're coming to Orlando in November. I'm so excited. So if anybody's going to the Joan show, we'll see you there.
We'll be there.
If you're in Orlando or around Orlando or St. Pete, they're going there too. Go check out Joan in
November. Oh, they're
going
to St. Pete in Orlando?
Yeah.
Wow, they said, sorry, Florida, we're hitting you twice now.
Florida! But yeah, I like so many producers. Like, I obviously love, you know, like Metro Boomin and Murda Beats if I'm listening to hip-hop. And then I love, like, A.G. Cook if I'm listening to, like, electronic hyper-pop stuff.
He really does have a wide range of music, you guys.
Yeah.
He's not one of those people that says that.
I love, yeah, like, Rodney Jerkins if I want, like, R&B. Like,
he really listens
there's
to a
so
lot.
Many cool producers out there. And there's so many producers out there that, like, you wouldn't even know. You'd be like, oh, my God, you did that major song? Like, it's pretty common that somebody will, like, follow Make Pop Music and reach out and be like, I love your videos. And then I'll, like, look them up and be like, oh, shit?
Yeah.
Like, they did what song? So there's just so many people out there making so much cool music. So if you are listening to like the same three or four producers, go find some more. I promise you, there's a lot out there. And there's somebody that I know that I'm forgetting that I'm going to be mad at, but
who does the Sabrina Carpenter stuff?
Jack Antonoff did the new one. And then the last one was just like a bunch of people.
Oh, and then what about Harry Styles?
He does Kid Harpoon. Kid Harpoon is really cool.
I was trying to think if that maybe it was one of those people, but no, I guess
I don't know. I'm like not super picky with, I'm not one of those people who's like, a music producer should have like a very certain sound in a very certain lane. I don't care.
Yeah.
If I like the song, I like the song. Like I'd rather like songs than like music producers.
Yeah.
And so I'm just like trying to pick producers where I like a lot of their catalog.
Yeah, that's why I didn't really know. But I know that Dan Nigro, like I love Chaperone. I love Olivia Rodrigo. So I'm like, well, I must like him as a producer because yeah. I like everything he does. Oh, and Conan Gray.
Yeah,
let's call him Conan O'Brien. Girl. But yeah, I like, so I'm like, yeah, I must like yeah. Dan Nigro. Stuff.
Oh, Andrew Wade over here in Orlando.
Oh,
fantastic,
yeah.
Like rock and pop punk producer. Zach Cervini, like another big rock producer right now. So, Oh, Andrew Goldstein. That's who I was forgetting. I would have been pissed had I forgotten that.
Yes.
Andrew Goldstein is really, really fire. Works with like a ton of alternative acts. But yeah, let's move on to the next question. That's a lot of producers for you to go check out.
I was just going to say, you named a lot of people.
The next question is, what made you choose to live in Florida instead of living in Los Angeles while pursuing music?
That's a good question.
I feel like this is a great one. And I feel like this is also one that you can kind of...
I'm not music though.
Yeah, but it is our life.
You answer.
I think that I got my music career working 100% remote, like online with people everywhere. And by the time I was making really good money in Florida, I was just like, I don't know if I'll ever move to LA. By the time I was getting offers for like publishing deals or labels or anything like that, I was like, I don't know. Like, we have a good living here in Florida where if I were to move to LA... For us to have, you know, a 2,800 square foot house and, you know, room for a studio and car payments and all of the bills that you have when you're self-employed, like, I need to be making millions of dollars in LA. And I understand that it has more opportunities going to somewhere like LA or New York or Nashville. But for me, any artist that would be a good opportunity has the budget to fly me out. Like, I will just fly out to LA and work out there. Or I can go out there and do like a little co-op for like a couple weeks. Or I can fly myself. Like LA is maybe a $200, $300 round trip flight. And New York about the same. And Nashville is like a $70 round trip flight.
New York and Nashville are really close.
I mean, Nashville's like, an hour and 15 minute flight. New York's like 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
LA, I kind of hate going to because it takes forever to get there.
Yeah.
But I will go if there is like a project that seems worthwhile.
Of course.
And like, I have a friend, Micah, he lives over here in Windermere, big producer. He goes to LA all the time. He was like, I don't want to fucking live in LA. It sounds like a nightmare over there.
Yeah, we've
so what he
LA
did was
once.
He just opened up a studio where he basically like, it's almost like a timeshare kind of studio where like he has his studio that he and his partner own. And then outside of that, they will, you know, say like, oh, we're not going to be in the studio from December to March, so let's just rent out the room for those blocks of time. So he can rent those out to writing camps, or he can rent those out to other producers or artists or film companies or whatever. And so Mike is like, when I want to go to LA, I have a studio out there. I can just, it has an apartment right above it that I can stay in.
Oh, that's nice.
And when I don't want to be in LA, I don't have to be. Like, it's just kind of an exhausting place to be for me personally. I'm not big on the super competitive, like, rise and grind schmoozy networking of it all.
Yeah.
With like the YouTube channel, honestly, it sounds crazy, but like I meet most of the people I'd ever want to meet from the YouTube channel. Like the amount of conversations I've had with people that I never thought I'd be able to speak to is so crazy. And I haven't had to have a publishing deal. I haven't had to have a record label. I haven't had to have, you know, an apartment off of Melrose. Like it's just one of those things where I did it a weird organic way and it worked out for me personally.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, I'm not saying that there's not tons of opportunities and stuff like that in LA. I think that it's a cool place that can be a great hub for career people.
We've also been to LA and didn't, which granted we only went once. So like I'm not judging.
I've been twice.
Oh, that's true. But I'm not judging the whole city based on only going, me personally going once. But neither of us loved it. Like the weather's great.
I actively kind of hate LA.
Yeah, we both like didn't. It's just like not our vibe.
I love New York. I love New York. I really liked Nashville when I went in January.
I think we're East Coast people.
LA, I'll go to for, I could see myself going there for like a 2 week camp max. And after that, I'm like, fucking get me home.
Yeah.
I just don't like the vibe. It's so expensive. It's such a weird, even like a session in LA is weird. Like a session in Nashville is so comfortable. I haven't done sessions in New York, but all of the people that I know that work out of New York, it would feel so comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
LA is just a really strange thing because I think there's so many people there trying to like grind their teeth and trying to like really get it.
Yeah.
And so like you might walk into a room that feels like a pretty simple session and be like, why are there 18 people here?
Yeah.
Because everybody's trying to get in on a session. Where in Nashville, it's just like, I don't know, I had people pull up and like everybody's partying.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Yeah. It's just, it's not my vibe. It's not the way that I've ever worked with music, and I'll do it. Like I'll go to LA, but it would take a lot. I'd have to be making insane money where I could live in an insane part of LA in a crazy house and have a house somewhere else that I could leave to?
My answer is a lot shorter. I was born and raised in Florida, so I'm just used to being here. I don't think I can handle the cold. I've never even seen...
LA's not cold.
I know. But I don't like LA, so that doesn't really count. But I... anywhere else in, like, the country, like, I don't know if I can handle the cold. I've never even seen snow. I'm, like, a true Floridian.
Yeah.
And Austin's lived here since he was, like, 14, so...
And I lived here before that. I lived in Orlando as a kid.
That's true, yeah. So collectively more, but... Yeah, we've both just lived here for so long. It's just natural. And also, again, yeah, flights are not that bad. And Miami's a huge city, especially for music in Florida.
Yeah, like Angelo works out of Miami. Yeah, we have like Hit Factory down in Miami.
Yeah, it's 3 hours on the Brightline. It's really not bad.
Also, just I think people underestimate the cost of living. Like for us,
yes.
I am fully independent and we have make pop music. And so...
And we don't live in a cheap city. Like Orlando's not...
It's not
cheap.
Like we live in like the middle of like, you know, like Oklahoma or something like that. Like,
or even like Ocala or something like that in the middle of Florida.
Right. For the type of life that we get to live, it is affordable for us.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, I'm not saying that this is how much we make. I'm not saying yes or no. But like if somebody makes $100,000 in Florida, that is like making $200,000 in New York City or in LA. And if we live a life that takes XYZ, we would basically have to double our capital for it to be worth it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that would be the case. And we have so many friends here and...
Yeah, our lives are just here now.
Yeah, I want to raise a family in Florida. Like, I don't want to raise a family in LA.
Yeah.
Also, we don't have state tax here. So,
we don't, yeah.
Like, our taxes here are very good.
Yeah.
For especially people who own a business and are self-employed.
Yeah.
So that's really why we've chosen Florida. I will say that kind of segues into another question about travel. And somebody asked... What is my setup like when I am traveling to sessions? Like, what gear do I bring? How am I preparing, et cetera? This is one thing that I am actively trying to work on because I do want to travel to more sessions and collaborate because I have a really good time when I do it. So far in the past, I'm on a Windows desktop, which means I'm not very portable in my studio, but I have a MacBook laptop. I have Cubase on there. I have all of my like really essential plugins. I don't have everything because... I'm not downloading two copies every time that I have to, you know, get a new plugin. But I have a laptop that has a pretty solid copy of my workflow. And then I have like a travel interface. I have a little Apogee, like Duet 3. And typically what I'll do is I have like one of those camera backpacks that has like all the compartments where like you can put your lenses and your whatevers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll pack that up. I'll do my laptop charger. I'll do my interface, a set of headphones, a microphone, a mic cable. And then I'll normally like take my camera and like a tripod to like film things if I need to. And then other than that, like I just take I have my dongles on a little keychain. So I have like my iLock and Cubase is e-licensed now. So you don't need it. But yeah, that's pretty much it. And then when I get to a studio, I can always plug into whatever their system is. So like when I went out to California and I worked with Jonathan Morrison and Nico and did the song for Apogee, I literally just, he had a docking hub and I just took my MacBook and plugged it right in and I was on the big computer screen. I was on his studio monitors. I just had to download the driver for his interface.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of walked me through that and I was set up in like 5 minutes. So that really is the key for when you're traveling for sessions is having like some kind of portable version of your studio computer, having all of your templates, having all of your plugins, and then having your own interface just to kind of work wherever you need to, but also having the capability to like just plug into a docking station at a studio. So I'm setting my studio up next week again from scratch. I might do a video on NPM if you guys want to watch that. But I am incorporating a docking station here. So even though I'm on a PC desktop, when friends come over and they bring their MacBook, all it is it's one little lightning cable. They plug that straight into their computer. And now they have access to literally my entire studio because it's basically a hub that has the USB ports of your MIDI controller, your interface, which has like obviously your monitor outs. It has your HDMI for your screen. So that is the key, is like having a good docking station and having a computer that is compatible with that. But other than that, that's really it. It's really simple.
Next question.
Have a good backpack.
Oh, that's true. A protective backpack.
Yeah. And get traveler's insurance when you're traveling with gear.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go on to the next one. Danielle, somebody named Danielle asked, why are you guys the coolest?
Is that my Danielle?
Yeah, it's your Danielle.
I love you, Danielle.
Let's go on to the next one. Somebody asked what's on my master bus. This will be a quick one. Typically, it's like a bus compressor. A lot of the time I use Slate BBC Red. And then I go from that into like a clipper. Sometimes I'll do like Gold Clip by Schwab Digital. And then recently I was using Saturn on all of my master buses. And recently I replaced that with the Mixhead plugin from Make Believe Studios. I did a whole video on that one. And then that goes into, sometimes I'll use the Wave LinMB. It's like a linear multiband compressor. And I'm just using that really to like boost my level and do a little bit of tone shaping. And then that goes into my final limiter, which 99% of the time is FabFilter Pro L2. But sometimes if I don't want to deal with any of that, I just throw on that Lander mastering software that they have. I've done a whole video on it. And that thing really is good. Like, I'm not sponsored right now by them. They sponsored one video, but I can say whatever I want about the plugin. That thing is sick to just like load up. It's basically a foolproof way to like not accidentally ruin your mix with mastering or with like a two bus. So if mastering stresses you out, just use something like that. And a parlay into another question. I'll do a twofer right here. Mm. Somebody did ask, what are my thoughts on like AI mastering suites? So something like Ozone or something like the Lander setup or like Masterplan, where they have these like AI algorithms that will help you basically master your song in just a few clicks.
Right.
I love those as tools. I don't really put those in the same kind of generative AI category of something like ChatGPT or OpenImage or DALL-E or anything like that. Because while yes, it's still AI, it's so based on an algorithm that is dynamic with whatever you're inputting. I feel like you still have control over that. So like with the Lander thing, if I upload it and I choose between the three different, you know, circuitries that it has and I dial in the compression, yes, it's AI, so it's helping you get a good starting point. Same with Ozone or Masterplan. They're helping you get a really good starting point, but at the end of the day, you still have controls to do whatever you need to. And it's not that much different than just like loading up a preset in something like FabFilter Pro L or something like, you know, like the Slate, what is their mastering software? The FG2 or whatever the Slate mastering software is. But yeah, I'm totally fine with basically like smart plugins or something like Gullfoss.
Yeah, well, I think AI tools, again, not the same thing as using AI to make art.
100%.
Or like steal art from 100%. People.
100%. So when I talk about hating AI, I'm talking about things that are like actively ripping off people who are like doing creative input. And I know that you could argue that like these mastering softwares are bad for mastering engineers, but that is only part of a mastering engineer's job.
Yeah, like, and I don't think that people who are going to hire a mastering engineer are going to like be like, oh, well, there's an AI thing now, so I'm not going to do that. Like, again, it's the same thing of like the people who would have hired the mastering engineer are not the same people who are going to think that an AI mastering tool is going to like make their mix sound exactly the same as if they hired somebody. Those aren't the same camp of people, so I think it's fine.
And we live in the day and age where like people have had the capability to like master their own music now for 10 years.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
If they were doing it, they were doing it. They just have new tools to kind of assist that. When you hire a mastering engineer, this is another question that I'm kind of parlaying into. Somebody said,
wow, just a parlay after parlay.
Let me find exactly what they said. I don't even know if it's a question that I have on this submission. I know that somebody asked me the other day about what is the difference between like mastering your own music and having like a mastering engineer.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously with both of those, the end goal is to have like a song that is commercially loud, really, you know, competitive when it comes to like frequency balance and dynamics and impact. But at the end of the day, when I hire a mastering engineer, I want somebody that is going to step in while I'm still mixing that and say like, hey, that recent mix that you sent over before I master it, can you actually pull that kick down a little bit? Can you actually take a little bit of 12K out of the vocal? Can you actually open up the mid-range of that guitar? Because that's going to make their job easier as a mastering engineer. And they're doing some quality control before they even touch it.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're going to say, hey, there's a click and a pop right here. Or there's a weird moment of silence right here. And when I have a mastering engineer, I'm looking for somebody who will help me get the best version of my mix that then can do the best version of making that the best it can be. So I don't think it's just as simple as me sending like a pre-master and them just being like, oh, I made it louder and punchier. Like, if that's the mastering engineer that you go to, they're more so just doing like mastering prep. I want a mastering engineer who really is a person that's like, these are issues that we need to fix. These are issues. This is how everything needs to be to go out to DSPs. That's what I want with mastering engineers. Somebody asked, how do I know I'm good enough with music to build a fan base and get streams?
Oof. Hard question. I feel like you just have to believe in yourself. I mean, I know that's corny as hell, but it's true.
Yeah.
Thing is, do you like your music?
Exactly.
Like, do you like listening to your music? Because if so, the chances that there's other people that will want to listen to it are pretty high.
Yeah, I kind of feel like that's the wrong attitude to have when you're releasing music.
Yeah.
Like, just, honestly.
Yeah, if you enjoy releasing music, if you enjoy making it, if you like what you release and you believe in it, then I say do it.
Yeah, I think that if you are releasing... Sorry, my cat's sticking her paw under the door. If you are releasing music just to... Do you want to just let her in?
Okay, well, we let our cat in, so we'll see how that goes. Oh, God.
Terrible so far. At the end of the day, I think that it really comes down to just, like, make things that you want to make. And I think that a lot of people now weirdly get into music to, like, think that they're going to make money or whatever. There is millions of artists. Yeah, it's, like, the worst industry to get in if you're just trying to make money.
Yeah, it is.
Because the chances that you make literally more than $100 are, like, one in 20,000.
Yeah.
And then that you make a career out of it, it's, like, one in a million. And I just think that... Make music because you like to, and if you're genuine, and if you have a sound, and if you have a vibe, even if the raw talent is not the big drawing factor, people will connect with that. There are tons of artists out there who, technically speaking, are not the most talented artists, but they have a good sound, they have a good image, they have a good vibe, they have a good personality with their fan base, and they've been able to cultivate careers off of that. There are other people that I think are extremely talented, but they're a bit dull personality-wise. But nobody cares because they're so talented.
Yeah.
And you might be in the middle. You just kind of have to make what you want, figure out the best way to deliver that. And when you get people who support, be appreciative, but don't expect it. I don't think that it's one of those things that you should get into music being like, oh, how do I get a song with 1,000 streams? How do I get 10,000 followers on Instagram? How do I get verified?
This is Sophie.
Sophie, talk your shit.
Maybe you can hear her purring. I doubt it. Sorry, she's bumping my mic.
Bumming that. The next question is, what do you think about using loops as song starters or just having them in the background? And one of your favorite songs right now is like 90% loops.
Who cares?
Exactly.
Like someone made that to be used as a, you know what I'm saying? Like someone made it to be used.
Yeah.
Why would you not use it?
This will be a fun question, because we have somebody who's literally just a casual music listener, and then somebody who not only makes music but makes loops.
Yeah, so, yeah. Oh, that's true. Yeah, I didn't think about that.
As somebody who makes sample packs and loops, I make those to be used. I don't care if people take one and literally don't like. We have MIDI packs. I've heard a dozen songs that have the same exact chords as my MIDI pack. They just loaded it up, they used it, and they released it, and they sound sick. I don't care. I think that people think way too much about it. I think that at the end of the day, people have been using presets and loops and samples and stuff like that longer than you even realize. Like, the biggest gorilla song of all time is legitimately just a stock drum loop from a drum sampler. Like, it is literally the first preset when you turn it on. You hit a button, and that is the entire gorilla song. Nobody gives a shit.
No.
I think that it just is a lot more highlighted now because... millions of people have Splice and millions of people didn't have that drum machine.
Yeah.
But the issue comes when you have something like Espresso by Sabrina Carpenter that uses a bass line and a guitar lick and a drum from Splice. And then it becomes an issue where what if I want to release a song that has those elements too? So it feels like it's just a cover of Espresso, but technically she doesn't own the copyrights to any of those individual elements that she used. Yeah, she owns her master for Espresso, but that's where things get complicated. And so when you're using loops and when you're using samples, just be ready that that might become an issue. The people who produced Espresso now might have to answer questions if it ever goes to court with other songs that they feel like it's stepping on or vice versa. So I'm all cool for using loops. I personally love using loops as starters. I love using something like Arcade from Output. I love using a Splice loop. I try my best to still change them and make them a little bit unique and kind of use that as a jumping off point personally.
Yeah.
But I don't give a shit. Like, just do whatever sounds good. It should service the song. I feel like too many people are like, technically, what should I be doing?
Right.
Fuck technically. Make a song good and nobody else cares. Like, out of the billion people that will hear Espresso, maybe 10,000 of us will know that that's a splice loop. So who gives a shit?
Exactly. Like,
it literally doesn't matter. So that's my opinion. Do you have anything to add?
Nope.
Yeah, I feel like mine was surprisingly like, who cares?
Yeah.
I feel like so many people get so entitled about like loops and stuff like that. It's just weird.
It's like anything with
But like,
the
look
creatives.
At samples. Like, you people, hip hop has been sampling records forever. And some are the most insanely chopped and screwed version of that sample where you'd never recognize, like, oh, that's a Dionne Warwick song.
Yeah.
Others are just like, yeah, that is just maybe got back. Yeah. Like, they did not change a single thing. Yeah, and that's fine.
When they do that guess a sample game on Hivemind, I'm always like, I don't even hear it. Yeah. And then they'll play the original and I'm like, oh, yeah, I still don't hear it. So I think it just depends.
100%.
If you like them, you like them. If you don't, you don't use them.
Bingo.
Easy.
Somebody asked, do I have any tips for endless inspiration?
I mean, I'm not going to answer for you, but it feels like there's no such thing as endless inspiration.
Yeah, I think creativity is definitely like a battery that can be drained and recharged.
Yeah.
And I feel like if you're feeling tapped, it might be time to just like, we've talked about this on the podcast before, yeah. But like just get out of the studio, go live life, go make experiences, go hang out with friends, go do things. Like at the end of the day, when we make a song, we are just funneling something of our own experience, whether it's something we lived or something we saw in a movie or something that our friends have gone through. And sometimes when you're just working and working and working and creating, you go through all of those prompts that you've created in your head and now you're tapped. And so I feel like everybody that I know that is a great artist or a great songwriter or producer is because they go out and they listen to tons of music. They go out and they live their life. They go out and they take entire weeks, sometimes even months off of creating. Like that's the reason the artists traditionally have had these album cycles of 2 years, right? They release an album.
Sometimes three, I feel
like. Yeah, they release an album. They spend about a year touring it. They spend about a year promoting that. Then they spend a few months taking time off, not getting in the studio, nothing. And then they're in the studio for about 6 months and then a new album comes out. That's why so many artists don't just release. Because it's a lot of work and it is super draining. So if you're feeling tapped, I think just take that as a sign that like you need to slow down, live your life outside of work. And just like tap into your feelings, honestly, like just something as simple as watching like a sitcom on TV, like pay attention to what's happening and then put yourself in those shoes of like, oh, what would I feel like if, you know, my friends were moving out of the apartment that they've lived in for years that like has been our hub?
Yeah.
Or like, what would I feel like if, you know, whatever situation you're watching, I don't know, if my husband was a meth dealer, who cares? Like it's. Even if your life is not super, super, super eventful, there's tons of stuff happening around you that you just have to pay attention to.
Yeah, I think people forget that you don't have to write about your own personal experiences all the time. Like, you can totally write songs from other people's perspectives or, like, you know, instances that you've seen or witnessed or whatever. Like, it doesn't have to be something that you've personally gone through for it to be impactful.
100%.
Or meaningful.
And listen to other things. Like,
Yeah.
If you're just trying to make music, like, I don't know, who's an artist? Like Bruno Mars. Don't just listen to Bruno Mars over and over and over. Listen to what Bruno Mars listened to. Go listen to 70s funk and 70s soul and 80s disco. Like, or just go listen to film scores. Go listen to, you know, jazz. Like, there's just tons of cool things that I think we can kind of take and pull from other genres. Like, I might listen to country and I might be like, I actually love how that kick drum sounds.
Yeah.
I'm going to use that in a pop track. Or I might listen to hip hop and be like, I love how that 808 sounds. I'm going to use that in a rock track. Like, there's just so many cool things that you can take inspiration from. So try to just be, I think, like a more mindful consumer of art and entertainment and just like life around you in general. Just like try to be a little bit more present and I think it'll help.
Yeah.
Let's go to the next one.
Sorry, guys. Sophie keeps bumping my mic.
They won't be able to hear it.
I know, I'm cutting it out, but if you're watching and you keep seeing me pulling it in, or if I sound different throughout different parts of that, it's because of her.
You'll be fine. Somebody said, how do you know it's time to raise your prices for longtime loyal clients?
For longtime loyal clients?
Yeah, so I assume like there's a person that I've been working for 2 years. I started out doing songs at like $500, but now I'm charging people $1,700. Like, how do I tell them?
That is a good question. I don't know. I'm assuming if they're a loyal client of yours, you could always be like, I, as you know, these have been my rates for, you know, X amount of time. And also, everything's expensive right now. So I feel like you could be like, with the price of everything, I have had to raise my prices, or like just been like, I've raised my prices since I've been working with you. I've been giving you a discounted rate, and you could even still give them a slightly discounted rate.
Yeah.
And then I'm sure they'd be fine with that.
Yeah, I think it's just about being open and honest, right? Like, if you've been working somebody for a long time and you've just progressed in your career, I don't think that it's fair to you that if they haven't progressed at a similar rate, now they can't afford your new rates or whatever. Like, that's,
yeah.
I'm sorry to say, but like, that's not really your problem.
It's not.
And if you if you're raising your rates, I assume it's because you have people coming in the door. So sometimes you outgrow artists that you work with, and it's unfortunate. And a lot of the time you grow with artists that you work with. And I think that you just need to have that open communication of saying like, hey, you know, I know for the last batch of songs we did, I did them for $600 per song. I just wanted to let you know that like in March, I'm actually raising my rates to XYZ. So if you want to book anything, I'll keep that rate until then. But past that, it's going to be a new rate.
Yeah.
And when you send people a quote, I have a stipulation on the bottom of every quote that I send. That quote is only good for 60 days because I might just decide to raise my rates, not for them specifically, but just as a whole.
Just in general, yeah.
And so people have 60 days from the time that I give them a quote. And typically, I've never really had artists care. I've definitely had artists be like, oh, that's out of my budget now. I can't really do that. And I'm like, okay, well, like, you know, let me know when you're ready or if you're ever ready or whatever. But like, I'm not going to apologize for my rates.
Right.
I put a lot of work into my career. I've invested a lot into my career. And sometimes artists don't grow at that rate. And then at the same time, it's like, well, if you're raising your rates and you're working with bigger and better people and you're kind of bringing in new things, sometimes it might not be conducive for your own career to be working with people who are kind of stuck in one place. So
yeah.
I know it sounds really harsh, but like, raise your rates. And if they're serious, they will probably be able to pay that with you. And if they're not, then it's okay to be sympathetic, but it's also okay to be like, look, I'm sorry, but like my rate is my rate. I had a great time working with you in the past, but like, if you're ever interested again, this is what the situation is.
I was also going to say, I feel like if someone's hiring you enough to be a long-term client, they're probably not going to care. I would hope they wouldn't. Like, they clearly like you as a producer for a reason. I doubt they're just hiring you for your because your rate is what it is. And if it is, then you might not want to work with that person anyway. Like,
exactly.
If they're only hiring you because of how much you charge and not for your creativity, then maybe you need it. They need to be dropped anyhow.
I have people that I've been working with for 5 years where the first song I did for them, I did a production mix and master for like $800. And now it's $3,500. And it's fine. Like,
yeah.
They've also had 5 years to improve their own career and get more streams and get more listeners and play more tours. So it is what it is. Like, time is, it's linear for everybody. So sometimes you move up the ladder in terms of people to work with, and sometimes it just kind of goes steady. It just is what it is. Like, I would never hit up somebody who has been doing music for a long time and be like, hey, what is your rate? Blah, blah, blah. And then they're like, oh, it's $7,000 for me to produce a song. And it's like, well, I saw on a Gear Sluts forum 10 years ago that you were actually doing it for $1,500. And they'd
right.
be like, tough shit, you know? I don't think that just because an artist has worked with you in the past, they're like entitled to you breaking down your rate for them. How can I collaborate with artists all around the world from my country, India? This is something that I've done my whole career. I've worked with people in pretty much every country that I could name off the top of my head now. And I think that it really just comes down to like having a good workflow and communicating that with the artist or with the client or whatever before the project starts, right? So if I'm working with somebody from Australia and they're 12 hours ahead of me, I might tell them, hey, on this day, I'm going to send you the first draft of an instrumental. Let me know what you think. Give me feedback. They'll send that while I'm sleeping. The next day I wake up, take their feedback, work on it, send it back to them. And sometimes it can take a little bit longer to go back and forth like that. Something that could only take 2 days in the room might take a couple weeks of back and forth. But it's not the only thing that you work on. So when you're working remotely, I think it's really important to try to have multiple projects going on at once, because I might have 2 hours of work to do for one project one day and then 2 hours of work to do for another project that day. And if you're only doing the, you know, I'm only going to work on one or two things at a time, once those artists are kind of busy and it takes them a couple days to give you an update or whatever, you're kind of just sitting around waiting. So if you're in a country like India, I think it's really important to just connect with people everywhere and just try to work on as many things as you possibly can, manage at once. And it really is just down to like having that system of saying like, oh, I am cool to basically get on Skype or Zoom or whatever and do sessions like that. Or like, that's not really how I work. I prefer to go back and forth and we can send voice memos and hop on calls and stuff like that. But like, I don't really want to like work in front of a computer screen with you watching because it just doesn't work well. That's not really something I do a ton. I've done like co-writes and stuff like that, and they're fine. It's just kind of a strange vibe because I feel like the artist is just sitting there and almost like trying to find things to input or to change or whatever. I don't feel like it's really like serving the song. So instead, what I do is I start a project and I say, hey, do you have a demo or a work tape? And if they do, then I'll get that. And I'll say, what do you like versus what do you don't like? What do you don't like? I'll get the demo and the work tape and I'll say, what do you like versus what do you not like? And then I'll say, you know, do you have any inspirations or references? I'll have them put all of that in a little list. And then once I take all of that, I'll kind of come up with a pitch for them and say like, hey, based on what you're wanting, what if we take your demo and we lose this bass here, but we incorporate a bass similar to this 1975 song? And then what if we take this synth and we swap that for a synth that you'd hear in a Lainey track? And then what if we take this guitar and we do something a little bit more plucky? And I'll kind of lay it out on paper before I jump in and spend hours on it. And then once they kind of approve that, you know, rough pitch, we're on the same page. So then it really is just as easy as going back and forth. I think doing a little bit of extra pre-production and taking that time to set the project boundaries is huge. I think that that takes away a lot of the back and forth, and that can be easily done with anybody anywhere. The next question I have is, during the early phases of your career, how did you approach learning music production? This is something that I get a lot. People will ask, like, did I go to school for it? Did I take any courses on it? Music production for me was always just like, learn as you go. So I started producing music to make demos for my band in high school. And when I was doing that, you don't know what problems you need to learn until you kind of encounter them. So I'd say, oh, we need to record guitar. How do I record guitar? And I would look up an article, or at the time there were a couple YouTube videos, but not many. Or I'd go to like an online chat room or forum or whatever and just say like, hey, I'm trying to get sound out of this guitar amp and into my computer. How do I do that? And somebody will nicely step in and say, hey, for that, what you might want to do is actually just use an audio interface, plug your guitar into that, and then you can use something called an amp simulator, where now you can control the tone inside your computer. And that's just one very specific example. But as you produce, you'll encounter different problems and different issues that you need to find solutions to. And then it is just, how well can you research that problem and find a solution? I think that a lot of people kind of like get into music production and assume that they're going to just like learn all of the tools and the techniques and whatever in one big batch, and then they're going to have that to go make songs with. But I think the better way of doing it is saying, hey, I want to create music. I'm just going to create freely. And then when you encounter something that is kind of a roadblock, say, I don't really know what the kick drum sound I'm looking for is. Let me look up the kick drum that is in a song that I'm really inspired by. And then once you look that up, you might see somebody on a Facebook group say, oh, I love the song that Dua Lipa used in her new album. It's actually an Ian Kirkpatrick production, and the sound is just an Oliver kick off of Splice. And now you know what you need to look up. So for me, I was all self-taught and, you know, the occasional YouTube video or article or whatever. But it really is just trial and error. It takes time. It takes experience. It's just one of those things of like, you don't know what you don't know until you don't know it.
Wow. And
I know it sounds crazy, but
a lot of don't knows.
It's that really is the truth. Like, there are so many people that are like, oh, how, you know, I want to get this Charlie XCX vocal sound. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, like, you know, you're going to need some distortion. You're going to need some hard tuning, and you're going to need like a phaser. And they're like, what is a phaser? And it's like, well, you have to figure out those building blocks first, and then you can learn the more complex technique. So
yeah,
it's just create freely, learn the kind of staple tools, the staple fundamentals that are technically speaking going to be the same forever. Then learn how to kind of break those rules to achieve the sounds that you want, and learn where to look for that inspiration and those tools and mechanisms and stuff like that. But that really is it. It just takes time. Like, it honestly took me probably 3 or 4 years to like make something that I was like, oh, I'll release this. Before that, it was just junky SoundCloud demos. And that's fine. Like, I made hundreds, if not thousands of them.
You got to go through the mud.
You do. It's going to take 10,000 songs to write one good one. Other than that, I think we have time for like, let's do like one more.
You don't think they want to hear me sounding all stuffy like this?
It's already been 50 minutes.
I know. I'm sorry, guys. My allergies are terrible. So I'm sorry for the terrible nasaliness.
I know.
It's so annoying, I know. But thankfully, I haven't been talking too much.
Okay. The last question that I kind of want to talk about is how to find high-ticket clients. And I want to talk about this because I feel like that is a horrible attitude to have.
Okay, I was like, I kind of just made that obvious with my face. But
yeah, I think they probably mean well, but I...
No, totally.
Again, feel like it's one of those things where people get into music and they feel a little bit entitled to like make a career out of it, make a bunch of money off of it, make a bunch of fame off of it. And it takes time. Like, I don't know at what point of your career you're currently at. I don't know who you've worked with or what you've done. I think looking at artists is... high or low ticket clients is not an attitude that people will resonate with. I think the better attitude to have is, how do I find opportunities to work with newer and bigger artists? And I think that that just takes time. It takes networking. It takes dragging yourself through the mud. I just got a text the other day that I've landed a placement that I've wanted for probably 7 years. It's a band that I've been listening to since I was literally in college. That famously... I remember when I was in college, I wanted to work with them, and I heard from somebody that they don't work with outside producers. And so I was like, ah, fuck it. That one's written off. Got introduced to them not too long ago, submitted a song, got a text from their management yesterday that they're going to use it. That took years. I have hundreds of millions of streams under my catalog. I have thousands of songs that are out, and it took that long to get what most people in the music industry would probably consider like a good credit. It's not going to be like a career changing credit for me. It's not going to be like a multi-platinum selling song, most likely, but it means a lot to me. And it is definitely a step up from things that I normally work on.
Yeah.
I worked on some music with Joan for their last album. I met them through a Facebook group because somebody who was one of their tour managers was in that group, and somebody had a question about how to create a synth sound like Joan, and he tagged Alan and Steven in it. I connected with them, told them that I loved them. They came on the podcast as the first guest ever. It's like episode 2. And then we just vibed so well that they were like, we love your channel. We love your energy. Do some production for Superglue. So I did that. And now we're friends. We talk all the time. And it takes years to build those connections. I have so many friends that I would love to collaborate with that live out in LA or Miami or New York, where just timing doesn't line up. Budgets don't line up. Just things don't happen. And I don't look at it as like, how am I going to score like a high ticket project? I'm not like, oh, how do I kind of like slide my way in to work on like the next Dua Lipa track? That's just like a weird attitude to have. And people can see through that immediately. So I think just instead of trying to promote yourself, show your work and people will gravitate towards that. Like, I never want to feel like I'm like selling my productions or even like really trying to like sell our course. I'm like, I want to show you what I can do. And I want to show you that I have the option for you to hire me or purchase a course if you want to see my workflow. But that's not my goal. I think that it just comes back to like so many people are too worried about the money. I didn't start making money in music at all for years.
And you know what's funny is I feel like when you work with bigger artists, you're probably not getting paid up front. So you're not working for free, obviously. But you are creating a bunch of songs and pitching them to people that they might not use. So it is kind of like working for free almost. Like the chances that you get picked up are pretty slim. So
that text that I got about the placement this week, I haven't even heard the final song. Last I knew, I sent stems to this artist.
Yeah.
With hopes that they use it. And I got a text that it is going to be on an album. I haven't negotiated a rate. I haven't talked about a split. That is the difference of like working with people as an independent contractor doing like independent work where I can say, hey, $3,000, half up front, half the end, that's fine. And then pitching to big label artists or big publishing companies is like, they know that you're going to want to place that song with them. There is not a lot of those like conversations to be had at the start. Like if you're trying to get a song placed with Drake, you're not going to be like, oh, I'll send you a pack of beats. By the way, it's $5,000 if you want to use one. They will immediately throw your shit in the trash.
Yeah.
Where if Drake listens to one and he likes one, he might say, hey, what do you want? And you get to say, I want a $50,000 advance and I want 3 points or 4 points on the record or whatever. I don't think that you should be looking at artists as high ticket versus low ticket. These are not, I don't even like calling people who pay me clients typically. I like calling them artists. Like at the end of the day, I want to make music with people and I have to get paid to do my service. But I don't want to go into it with an attitude of like, you're not worthy because you don't have a certain budget or whatever. It's just not the vibe to have. So I don't know how helpful that was, but
this is also, I just want to say the creative industry, any creative industry in general, not the industry to get in if you're just trying to make money.
100%.
There are so many industries where if you're like, I just want to make a lot of money, there are a lot of industries that you can do that.
Yes.
Music, the arts in general, I would say not one of them.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of notoriously known for that.
Go into finance.
Yeah. Yeah, go in finance or engineering or go be a plumber or something like that. They make good money, allegedly. So
even for every one person like me who's not a millionaire by any means, but like lives a good, comfortable suburban life, for every one of me, there's 30,000 people that are not. And then for every one of somebody like Elangelo, there's 10,000s of me that are not. Like, yeah. It is, you know what I'm saying? There's just like, there's levels to this kind of shit. And it is hard to rise your rank if you're immediately just like, how do I get bigger ticket clients?
Maybe they meant it in a nice way.
I think they did. Like, that's what I'm saying. But that's why I'm saying, like, I would be very weary about even publicly using that kind of language because it will give people a bad vibe, like, yeah, right off the start.
For sure.
I think that's going to do it for the questions. Before we go, it's time for recommendations.
I remembered.
Let's go. She remembered.
I remembered.
I have one too, actually.
I'm curious if it'll be the same. Okay. My rec, very boring. It's going to be to go listen to Chapel Roan.
It's not the same, but that is so fire. Yeah. I think at the time that this podcast comes out, we had just released a Chapel Roan tutorial.
Yes.
Go watch that.
Yeah, really good. It's really good. But yeah, I've been listening to her album, The Rise and Fall of a Midwest Princess.
So fucking good.
It's so good.
She's so good.
I just love her. She's so campy and cool and just like, I just love her.
She gets it.
She's so authentically herself, and I think that's amazing.
We talked last time about like artists who, I feel like the like artists who have like a big brand and image and,
yes,
and like creative direction have kind of died out. She is not one of those. I wish we would have talked about her in the last episode.
We were goofing.
She's fantastic. Go listen to Chapel Roan.
Yes.
Mine? I'm going to recommend, a couple weeks ago, Arturia sent me the Key Lab Essential 49. I'm not sponsored. Sometimes companies will send free gear and they're just like, if you like it, keep it and use it. If you don't like it, give it away, send it back. I don't really care. You don't have to talk about it. You don't have to feature it or whatever. So I fully went into this being like, I love Arturia. I've spent thousands of dollars with them out of my own money. So I appreciate it. I'll try it out and be honest. This thing is so fucking sick. By far the best like small budget MIDI controller that I've ever used. I just wanted a small one for my desktop. I got the 49 key. It's just the Essential. It's not even like the Pro one that they have. It's so good. The way that it incorporates with all of their software is so fire. I've been using so much of their software now for synths because it feels like you're working with like a real synth.
Right.
The screen on it's nice. The knobs are nice. I don't use native instruments a lot, so I didn't want their controller. And before this, I was just using like a M-Audio one. So that's my recommendation. If you're looking for a MIDI controller and you're a big synth person, the Arturia one is, to me, by far, like the best investment. I think this thing's like $250 and it could easily be the only set of keys in your whole studio. So go check that out. But that's going to do it for this episode of The Sound Table. We're going to go on vacation tomorrow. We'll see you guys when we get back. But until then, much love, peace.